Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Addition Financial, offering their Savings Plus account with a 4% annual percentage yield. Serving Central Floridians since 1937 and was recently named one of Newsweek's best regional credit unions. More at additionfi.com/NPR. Applicable on savings up to $5,000. Rate subject to change, federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, howdy, space nerds. This podcast is a production of WMFE Public Radio. As a public radio station, we rely on the support of our listeners to keep the lights on and programs flowing. We're in our silent pledge drive right now and could use a little help reaching our fundraising goals. You can make a contribution by visiting WMFE.org/support or calling 1-800-785-2020. Thanks. From the studios at WMFE in Orlando, Florida, this is the Space Exploration Podcast that asks the question, are we there yet? Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. Every rocket that launches from Cape Canaveral falls under the watchful eye of the Air Force's 45th Space Wing. Headquartered at Patrick Air Force Base, the wing is responsible for the safety of the launch, including weather, and the safety of the residents of Florida's Space Coast. Air Force leaders want to ramp up launches from the Cape, targeting 48 launches a year. That drive falls under the command of the new leader of the 45th Space Wing, Brigadier General Douglas A. Schess. I sat down with General Schess at Patrick Air Force Base to talk about the 45th's role in launching rockets and upgrades happening at the base to help support more launches. First of all, let's start with kind of explaining the role of the 45th in launching rockets. Sure. What's your job here?
Yeah, so we kind of have two aspects to our job from the launching the rocket standpoint. The first is what we call range safety. So we have the Eastern Range here that's a huge instrumentation part of the, basically a big portion of the Atlantic Ocean, that we're responsible to make sure that a rocket is safe from a public safety standpoint. In other words, we don't want a rocket to endanger the public. Second, we need to do resource protection. From a still range safety perspective, we need to do resource protection. And so a lot of the things that we have at the Cape Canaveral and Kennedy Space Center are important to other space launches, and so we need to make sure that we protect those during a launch. The other part of that is what we call mission assurance. So in other words, we need to make sure, especially when it's a national security space satellite, we need to make sure that the contractors that are preparing the rocket and actually getting the rocket ready to launch have done everything that they need to do to make sure that that rocket's going to get that satellite to the proper orbit. So that mission assurance is us doing that second set of eyes on what the contractor's doing to be able to make sure that it's going to get in the right orbit.
When do those preparations start ahead of launch?
Yeah. So part of it depends on which rocket and which satellite. So a lot of the satellites get built somewhere else, and then they come here and they get their final processing in this area. Depending upon what kind of satellite, some of that's done on Cape Canaveral, some of that's done at Kennedy Space Center, and some of it's done in private companies that are around the area. And then the rocket as well is a lot of times built in other places, and so that it all comes together here. For example, SpaceX, they're continually doing launches on a pretty regular basis, and so could be, you know, a month out we're doing different things. Now, different or unique launches, maybe when we did the Falcon 9 Heavy or the Delta IV Heavy, could be many months that we're doing it. The satellite part, actually, when we're making sure that the satellite's getting mated to what we call the upper stage of the rocket and then putting the payload fairings on it, that could be very lots of weeks too, up to months preparing that. And so the folks that are doing mission assurance have to make sure that all that's ready. So it's not a great answer, but it depends on the satellite and the rocket. So
now you mentioned one of the things that you look for is public safety. Mm-hmm. Are you also looking at things like space traffic? Do you have to keep in mind what's above us at the time?
Yeah, actually that's kind of interesting. So one of my previous jobs, I was the commander of the 21st Space Wing at Peterson Air Force Base. And they have a squadron that does what we call the space catalog. But it also is just monitoring all of basically everything that's in space, and they're keeping track of that for us. So when we do a launch, we have what we call a collision avoidance. And so, in other words, we go out to that squadron and we say, hey, we're going to launch a rocket on this azimuth for this orbit at this time. Can you do a run for us to make sure that we're not going to, you know, hit anything on the way there? And so they do that. They do it many weeks in advance. So we kind of get, but then of course, actually, while we're sitting down on the countdown, we do another one and we take a look at what's out there and make sure that we don't put any danger to the new satellite that's on its way up or the rocket to make sure that we don't actually do the monitoring to know where everything is. That's what the 21st Space Wing does out at Peterson, but we work with them to be able to make sure that we are as safe as possible.
You don't hit it on the way up, right?
No. So actually, it's kind of funny. You could actually hit something because we take a risk of this is a pretty small piece and it's going to be okay. I say that, but then, you know, for the International Space Station, a little piece would be very dangerous. And so, but for a rocket, might depends on where it's at in the orbit and where it's going. Maybe the payload fairing's still on and it's not a big deal. But we have very smart people in our safety and in our collision avoidance that say, yeah, this is good to go. And it depends on actually who we're launching it for. So if it's a commercial company, they decide whether we're going to – we have a what we call range safety. Now, there's no way we're going to go through that. But then they decide if maybe it doesn't meet the range safety, but maybe it meets their, hey, we don't want to take a chance.
What about weather forecasting? That's another important aspect of launches that you take care of, General. Can you kind of explain the role they play?
Yeah, so we have the 45th Weather Squadron here that's a part of our wing, and they do an incredible job of making sure that we're ready to launch on launch day. So this is probably the best place in the world to launch the kind of orbits that we launch into. Our sister wing, Vandenberg, 30th Space Wing out at Vandenberg, they launch different types of orbits, and they're perfect for where they're at. So geographically, this is a great spot. However, this is the lightning capital of the world, per se, or at least the United States, and so that makes things a little bit more difficult. Lightning and rockets don't necessarily go together very well, and so but there's all kinds of other things, different kinds of clouds, different kinds of just the electromagnetism that's in the air, rain, all those things. And so we have very specialized weather officers. We call them launch weather officers. They get trained in what all the criteria. And from several decades ago, people put together what's a criteria that this is okay to launch through. And so these weather officers spend quite a bit of time getting certified. Different thing than your weather that's just doing like an airfield or something like that. Although these folks know how to do that as well. So they get trained and then they sit on console with us during the launch and they're continually evaluating. We have all kinds of instrumentation to give us the best forecasting capability that we can have. And I've sat on launches before where you're driving up to the Cape and you're like, there is no way. The weather is completely bad. And then I walk in and the weather forecaster's like, hey, sir, we got, depending upon the launch window, which depends on what the satellite is and the orbit it's going to, hey, sir, it looks like we got a 10-minute window that we're going to be able to launch through. And sure enough, most times they're right. And then we launch through that. But they're also, sometimes they're telling us, hey, we're not going to be able to launch, during this window. And but a lot of times we still sit in the count because you just never know. Weather's not. They do a great job forecasting, but weather changes, pretty darn quick.
And some of the instruments that you use for those weather forecasts are the same satellites that you're launching here, right?
Right. So we obviously have weather satellites, both Department of Defense and commercial, the NOAA satellites. But we also have a lot of instrumentation just around the Cape and the local area, too. We do weather balloons, send up a weather balloon that's given us the wind data and things like that. But we have all kinds of weather visualization is the next thing we're doing as we're moving into what we call our multi-domain operations center. So we're taking the instrumentation we have and maybe taking it to a next level. It's this innovation. So for instance, we might observe lightning in the area. And in the past, we've had to go, okay, we don't quite know exactly where that lightning is or was. And is it going to be in the path of the rocket? And so maybe we make some more what I'll call conservative decisions on not launching during this time. But we're taking all of that data. They're using higher fidelity algorithms and putting that together. So then they can actually look through, hey, here's where the rocket is going. And they can say, you know what, even though that lightning just happened, it's not going to be anywhere near where we're going. So those a lot of innovative folks in the weather business trying to get it so that we can launch more often as we drive to 48 to get to 48 launches. We don't want weather to be the thing that holds us back, even though we know that we have to, be mindful of it.
You just mentioned it, that drive to 48. That's 48 launches in a year, right?
Correct.
That's the goal.
Yeah. And it's kind of a, we just threw it out there. I'm not saying that it didn't have a lot of data behind it because it does. But we just, this is a big goal that we're going after. And what that really means is there's obviously 52 weeks in a year. We need about 2 weeks twice a year to what we call recapitalize and do maintenance on the range. And so we take all that instrumentation, maybe do some periodic maintenance on it, or we bring in a new capability. So if you take those 4 weeks out, that leaves 48, and we say, hey, let's launch a rocket once a week. But I don't know that we're going to stop there. Maybe we're going to launch a rocket once a day. But right now what we're seeing, we're at 21 launches this year. And our schedule, it always is changing based on what's going on. And we have at least four more scheduled for the year, maybe five. So we're really hoping to get to 24, 25, maybe 26, so we can say we're halfway to 48. But most of our schedule, looking out to 2019, is around 30. And so we're on the way. But it's not just the innovation that we have to do and the things that we have to do for the instrumentation. It's a culture. It's a culture of, we want to be as fast as we can so that we can be good customers with our commercial folks that are launching to for their business. But then the next day they're launching for us for our national security space. And that's what the great teamwork we have here together.
Would the 24 launches, would that be a record for...
So we really think way back in the heyday, they probably launched a lot more than that, and maybe not all of them were orbital, maybe suborbital. But in the latest period of time where we really kept great track of it, we had 23 launches in 2016. That's a pretty good year. But we believe if we can get to 24, 25, that will be the most we've had in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, launches are ramping up with some private customers that you spoke about, all these different national security missions. What are you doing here on the base to prepare for such a packed schedule of launches?
Yeah, so one of the things we're doing under General Raymond's leadership, the commander of Air Force Space Command, is looking to make sure that we're not duplicative in our efforts. So in other words, you mentioned commercial companies. So while we still have a requirement because they're launching from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station or Kennedy Space Center, we have that requirement for protection of resources and protection of the public. The Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, actually licensed some of those folks to launch when it's a commercial launch. And if they can tell the FAA that they have everything they need to do to be able to take care of that public safety, then we still have our part of resource protection and others, but we kind of allow them. We want to make sure that when they go through the FAA process and our process, that we're not duplicative. In other words, for that company, they don't have to think, oh, I'm going to do something different when I talk to the 45th Space Wing than I am when I go to FAA, or even I'm going to talk when I go to Vandenberg different. And so get rid of some of those duplicative efforts. We want to be able to change the range faster. So in other words, that's bringing up the instrumentation. One of the things we did is we used to have big, huge antennas that take a lot of maintenance and a lot of care, and we still have them, but we also have these things called frequency control vans. And so, satellites sometimes can be very susceptible to different frequencies out there that might hurt them while they're here, on the Earth before they get launched. And so a lot of times we'd use those vans to measure the frequency. So in other words, maybe a ship, maybe a cruise ship, maybe some other ships out off, and they're using a frequency that would maybe hurt our satellites. So our vans would be out monitoring that spectrum, and they'd be able to say, hey, hold on, we're seeing some spectrum over here. Well, those same things can do telemetry antennas. And so we had very innovative civilians and military folks that said, let's turn some of those vans into some telemetry vans. And so then that gets us away from that big static uh-huh. antenna. Obviously, things that help that are, networks that are faster, and so you can have a smaller antenna. And so we're looking at different ways to do that because if, for instance, instead of having a bunch of static antennas across the range, if I had a bunch of vans and then I can move it over here when I'm launching here today and then I move it over here when I'm launching some other day and then I can bring it into a hangar, mm-hmm. do all the maintenance instead of going out to a big antenna and doing it. So that's one of the things that we're working on is to be able to make the range faster, be able to turn the range around. In other words, launch today for, SpaceX with this satellite, launch tomorrow with ULA and a different satellite, and being able to turn the range around to have a different configuration than it had the day before. And so a lot of innovative things going on to make sure that we can go faster.
Are other launch facilities looking to you to kind of see the best practices that you've tried in and kind of utilizing them at other launch facilities?
Yeah, so we're really working together with our sister wing out at Vandenberg Air Force Base that does launches out there. And so as a matter of fact, we're meeting all the time. We call it Range of the Future. Mm-hmm. How can we make the range more modernized? And so we're working together. But we also are a part of what we call the Range Commanders Council. And so up in Wallops in Virginia, NASA has a range up there. They do mostly suborbital up there, but they can do orbital. We work together with them, and we make sure that we have best practices, lessons learned, and work those through those council to make sure. And then we We've always had a great relationship, but we have probably the best relationship ever seen with our commercial customers. You know, and that sometimes they have great ideas, and we're the open communication we have with SpaceX, ULA, and then bringing on the new customers with Blue Origin and others. We're working together with them to make sure that by working together, we're going to be better at this.
Do you ever think you'll get to a point where you have to turn customers away or turn launches away?
I hope not. You know, I mean, obviously, I mean, one of the things, I guess, if you think about it, is the Cape Canaveral is only so big. It is big, but it's only so big. If we continue to bring other customers on and you know, maybe they'll start to be too close to each other. But I don't see it right now. You know, if I was doing my mission brief, I have a big picture of the Cape, and I show what we're doing now, and then I show what we're going to do in the next 5 years, and we're adding lots more capabilities. So I don't see that happening in the near future. But hopefully we're going to be so innovative and thinking through that that won't ever happen. So
now there's some other private launch facilities opening up across the country in Camden. There's one in down in Texas. Mm-hmm. Is that a threat to Cape Canaveral and what you do here?
Yeah, so we never think of it as a threat. Obviously, we have the resources here that we need to be able to launch the national security space satellites with. And the more folks that are launching, the more folks that are bringing innovation to it, it's great. You know, one of the things that we do here that you really can't do in other places right now, per se, is that we can make sure that you don't launch over people. And so they've got a lot of things that they've got to work out at those other places to be able to say, hey, here's a rocket that's going to launch from, you know, somewhere that's going to go over a public area. But I don't see it as a threat. I see it as continuing to work together and continuing to find ways to be more effective at what we do. So,
do you feel that you have to sell the 45th Space Wing to launch companies, or is it a clear bet to come down here and launch your rockets?
Well, so I don't think we have to sell. I think obviously because of the resources we have and the space launch complexes we have, that people want to come here. And as long as we continue to innovate and work together with them, I think they're going to want to be here. You know, one of the big benefits is we say when you're going to launch a national security space satellite, you're going to launch it from here or Vandenberg. And so they know that those same rockets that launch those also want to launch their commercial. And so having them work together here, I think helps them out with their business case of, I'm going to launch a GPS satellite today, and then tomorrow I'm going to launch a satellite for our commercial communications company. So I don't think I have to sell it. But, you know, the one thing is, you know, that we do have to do is just talk about the partnerships we have with NASA and others, because sometimes I think, you know, I'll be downtown and talking to someone and they won't even know that the folks here at Patrick are a part of what's going on. And so maybe that's our fault a little bit for not, you know, tooting our own horn per se, but we have a pretty good relationship with those with NASA and others, and making sure that this is the place to launch rockets from. So,
now, something that was unique to Cape Canaveral until a few weeks ago was not only were you launching rockets, but rockets were landing here too with SpaceX.
Yes, right.
What goes into prepping for a booster landing like that? Is it a launch in reverse? Like, what's your role in that?
Well, in a sense, it is a launch in reverse, which is that's interesting you say. So when I was here 2012 to 2014, I was the ops group commander, and we did not bring rockets back. And I'd probably say most of the folks that they were talking about it a little bit. So even there, that just by the fact I'm saying, and I left in 2014, we weren't quite ready yet. And so now, you know, just 4 years later, they've done a bunch of landings. I think we're up to 24 landings since 2015. And so that's pretty amazing that in four years, we're now landing on a regular basis. And it is a launch in reverse because we still have to do that public safety because you got a rocket. The interesting part is I haven't been here for one yet that's come back. We had one come back, you know, onto a barge, mm-hmm. but we haven't had one come back to the land. That'll happen here in the next few months or whatever. But from what I understand, it looks pretty interesting of this rocket coming back, and so I look forward to seeing one. But you're right, we have to do the same thing, telemetry, radar, all those things to make sure that the rocket is staying on track as it comes back, because we obviously don't want it to go off course and do something that it shouldn't do.
What are some of the things you're doing to preserve the history of Cape Canaveral and the 45th Space Wing? I mean, this place has such a storied history when it comes to space exploration.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we partner with, we have a museum up at the Cape Canaveral, and there's a museum foundation that's a private organization that works through that. And so we are trying to make sure that we keep good care of the nation's space history. Obviously, working with Kennedy Space Center, who has some of that history as well. But our museum is a thing. The one part that's always hard for us is, you know, we have to protect the base. And so trying to, there's a lot of stuff behind the wire that we'd like to be able to open up to the public. And so trying to find, working with our foundation, what can we take outside the fence and be able to show the public? And so, but this is also a pretty harsh environment. You know, you think about it, it's a beautiful beach, you're out on the beach, but there's the salt water and just the weather out here that we have to be able to restore. So we have to, you know, pay for that actually to, you know, keep some of those things in what I'd call pristine enough state to show. So we're working through that, and we want to be a good stewardship of our nation's history. So
that was the commander of the 45th Space Wing, Brigadier General Douglas A. Schess. Huge thanks to the wing's communication team, Lieutenant Paige Mehringer and John Way, for setting up this interview and joining me around the base. It's my first time there. Thanks. If you got questions or ideas for upcoming guests, let me know. Email me at areweThereYet@WMFE.org or hit me up on Twitter. I'm at SpaceBrendan. You can also follow the show. It's at AWTYMars. Are We There Yet, Mars? Get it? And while you're at it, be sure to rate and review this podcast so more people can explore exploration with us. Support for Are We There Yet comes from our listeners. Our theme music was composed by Kevin McLeod. You can find more space news online at WMFE.org/space. Until next time, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.